Food Podcast. Hi, I'm your host again, as always, Junior Ma. I'm doing today's podcast, as always, with my co-host, Mickey McLeod. How are you today, Mickey?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
It's warm in here.
I'm not as hungover as I was yesterday.
Yeah, it's been a real, real crazy 4 days. For me specifically, starting with Sunday at Mammy Taylor's for the Tiki Party, which was fantastic. Great. We had a great time, didn't we? I'm just nodding. It's a great time.
Okay, so today's episode, we're going to be bringing on we bring on our guest, another guest, Ron Oliver, as you just heard right now, a good friend of the podcast. This is his third time joining us. And we brought
him. Didn't hear him. He didn't say anything, but he will.
He will say something eventually. And then we brought on a great guest who I'm very excited to talk to, someone who's well-known in this city, Josh Pape, who is one of the co-owners of Gooseneck Hospitality. If you don't know that name per se, you probably know a lot of his restaurants and bars. Think of Bells and Whistles, Lucky Taco, Wildebeest, and The Diamond, and Bufala. And there's going to be Bufala 2.0 soon down the road.
Ooh.
So I don't know if it's soon-ish.
Soon-ish.
I live just down the street from Bufala in Carisdale.
In Carisdale.
Yeah.
Kidding.
Fortunately, I'm a vegan though, so I can't eat anything there. But or maybe I can. I don't know. I never asked.
I feel like there's options. There's not a lot of options.
Okay, I'll go in and check it out. Yeah.
Anyways, we brought these gentlemen on today to talk about Diamond. Actually, had a really big anniversary this past week. They celebrated their 10-year anniversary. So when you do listen to this episode, it's going to be about 2 weeks out. But I wanted to talk to Josh and Ron because they used to work together and they are good friends. And I wanted to kind of get a sense of cocktail culture, the significance of this anniversary being 10 years. It's kind of a harbinger of kind of the evolution of cocktail culture in the city. I'm actually working on a column about this right now for Scout, so look for that soon.
Ooh.
And pick their ideas and maybe hear some horror stories and fun stuff. So, gentlemen, thank you for joining us again.
Horror stories and fun stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you used to work just across the street, right?
I did. I worked at Chilwinson for 3 years. So I remember
a front row seat.
Well, I remember the front row seat of the day you guys actually opened. I was working I remember the noise coming out from that upstairs. And I remember hearing
like all the windows open.
Yeah, and I remember, I just remember everyone like being super excited for it. And I remember like even the first week and me being over there and I'm like, what the hell's going on? What is this? But I remember that time and it seems like yesterday, but it's crazy that it's been 10 years. So Josh, in itself, how does it feel to be 10 years in?
Painful a little bit, like just today physically, I think.
Well, by the way, it was your birthday yesterday, yeah, so happy
that
birthday.
That too. Thank you very much. Yeah. And thank you for having me also. This is cool.
Well, for coming in the day after your birthday.
Yeah.
Mad respect.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, it was ambitious, but I think it's important to get a bit of structure back in life and everything.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, really, I think that it's rare to get an opportunity to kind of stop and assess how special some of this stuff is, you know? And I've always, you know, I absolutely love the Diamond. I'm so proud of everything that has happened there and the team that we've assembled and the people that have come and gone and the regulars and culture. And I love all of it, but I don't often get to stop and actually appreciate that. And this was a really beautiful opportunity to kind of get everyone in one room and drink like we're in our late 20s again. and just, I don't know, it was just really cool. And so it was a very fun day and great opportunity. And like people flew in for it. And, you know, it was a pretty special banger of a night. So
I think you're forgetting the main part here. You took off your shirt for a little bit there.
Oh,
yeah.
I missed that.
Yeah, there was, I'm such an idiot. People,
there was some shirtless bartending going on.
Yeah. And I don't know why everybody just started chanting and saying, take your shirt off.
Yeah.
I heard it anyway. Ron, I don't know.
Ron, do you know any history to this? Were you a part of that?
I mean, yeah, back in the old days. There was, you know, we had this idea.
You said you guys used to have
shirts off parties. Yeah. So I'm sure it probably stemmed from that. Or it's just, I mean, everyone knows Josh's been working out. So just might want to see what 10 years does to a body. but yeah, on occasion there were sort of, you know, back when the Elk Room wasn't quite as open as what it is now. And, you know, you would kind of shut her down and then everybody would be back there grooving away, and a couple of times we had them in the front bar, and you know, somebody to go out for a smoke or whatever, and come, they forget to lock the door, and people like come up the stairs. We're like, everyone's got their shirts off dancing, and you're like, well, you can stay. The shirts come off. Invariably, the shirts came off.
Was it always the boys or the girls' shirts off?
Everybody.
Seriously,
it's not
a shirts. Yeah. It's not a shirts off party. God,
how did
Family's got their shirts off.
How did I miss these
rules? Are rules.
That's it.
So I was, when I saw that, I was expecting a lot of shirts to come off, but it was only yours.
Yeah, I get suckered into this stuff every time. I'm the gullible one that bites, and I don't realize that there was, you know, I was the brunt of the joke. I thought it was something we were starting, but yeah, I don't know. You know, sometimes that just happens, and I don't regret it.
No, it was good. Yeah. So
that must have been after, because I was lucky enough to join. And
no, you were there.
I don't think I was there when the shirt. I was in the back. It's called the Elk Room.
Yeah.
In the back of the sliding door. Yeah, I was kind of hanging out there most of the time. It was super, super chill. Yeah. The music was amazing. I'm not sure who was DJing, but
there were a few.
Yeah, it was really good. That's something I noticed. Aside from the energy in the room, I noticed that the music was really good. So
yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I think that was one of the fun evolutionary changes of the Diamond was adding DJs all the time.
Totally.
I think that we used to always feel like we could just do it with, you know, whoever's iPod and play music, and you kind of can. But that really discredits the value of somebody that's actually reading a room and is a professional at playing music.
So I could not agree more.
So we were just talking about this just a few minutes before we went on air, because Mickey just DJed at Ron's at Mammy Tao's on Sunday.
And I did.
It's from what I saw, from what I heard after I left, was that it was a pretty big
Weird. It was weird. It was like a really slow start.
Yeah, and then, the opposite of the last one.
Yeah, and then like it just was like crushing in there.
No, but
like,
you were talking about the idea of how you said that the first one you did, you were playing a lot of like, what were you playing? Funk.
And the first one was like surfer rock and like funk and soul and disco.
But you said this time you were reading. It was 80s. You were reading the room better, and you were playing a lot more 80s. And you're saying,
it was predetermined that we were going to do 80s.
But you
80s rock, 80s pop. 80s
but you could tell how you were saying like you were able to kind of get a sense of the room and the vibe and what people are kind of gravitating towards. And I think that kind of peaks on what you're talking there. It's like how if the room is kind of feeling this kind of mellow vibe, the DJ can kind of play with that and work.
Oh yeah, totally, absolutely.
Yeah, it's got to ebb and flow, right? And that's the one thing that, you know, when you're also busy working service, you can't monitor
change
that.
Yeah, exactly.
You can have like just a perfect song on, but it's like there was nobody in the room yet, you know? And it's like, oh, fuck. Well, now we got to start over. I'm going to curse. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Remember that happens. That.
Swear away. We like swearing. Swearing's
yeah,
fun.
Okay, good. But yeah, so just having somebody that can really do that, it makes such a big difference. And you know, I think there was so much energy in that room anyways. But it was pretty cool, just building on that the whole night.
But like when you're behind that bar again, because you guys were doing a rotating cast of getting people behind the bar from to bartend, like Charlie to Ron to yourself to people that have worked there.
Yes.
When you're back there, because when you opened, and I've talked to you about this in the past, you and Charlie were the main bartenders, right?
Well, Jeff was also there at the beginning, and Charlie and Sophie. Who else was
Ron? You came in what? A couple years later.
Chris Stearns was always in the back.
Yeah. You came in how many years later?
I came in the second year.
Second year.
Yeah, in 2010.
2010. Okay. But did when you're back there and you're with that vibe and you're seeing all these people, do you ever? Because I know you don't bartend anymore, but do you ever kind of like I kind of really miss this?
Oh yeah. I mean that was.
You say that.
Yeah. I miss it for exactly that much, you know? Like
Yeah.
It's like, not every day people chant at you to take your shirt off, right? So you gotta enjoy that moment while
no,
it happens.
No, but at the end of the day, I mean, think about it. We're all bartenders at heart.
Yeah.
That's what we all came up in. That's where that's really what kind of brought us into this industry. It's one of the things that we all love about it is the energy, the flow, the vibe, the feeling. I mean, yeah, you're right. When you say like, I mean, Ron, you've even told me this. You're like, after a Friday night and I've made 500 cocktails, my body's...
And now it's time to close down the well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then my body's telling me, yeah, I'm not 29 anymore.
Yeah, that was the best part about 10 years on is we didn't have to clean anything up.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's interesting. I always think about that. It's like when like you two are you guys own your own restaurants now and you guys are doing stuff like this. But it's when you pull yourself from that a little bit. I always wonder if people that have, if they ever like think, I wouldn't mind doing this like once a night or.
Well, I think that the energy of it, you know, the peak moments when it's going well, that's what you remember. And you think, hey, I could do this. I love that. And that's, I mean, I love bartending. So like, it's like with everything I have, I just love it. I loved everything about it while I did it. And you know, it felt like, you know, the physical demand of was like playing sports, trying to, you know, just get more efficient, be better, be faster, while being, you know, trying to be charming and funny and, you know, trying to stay sober and, you know, all of that stuff all in one go. I loved all of those challenges and like the rushes that you get when that's going well. And I love it. But the reality is that, you know, exactly that, you know, working an 11 or 12 or 13 hour shift and setting up a bar, tearing it down, doing the whole thing. Like I just, can't really do that anymore and be productive in my life and do the things that I'm enjoying doing and growing professionally. So that's why I just can't really do it. I don't want to do it poorly. You know, like we tried it for a little while. I used to do, you know, shifts as needed on the schedule and stepping in. But, you know, it's not fair to everybody else on the team to be the weak link when you show up and do it. And it's just, it didn't go well. It stopped going well. And I recognized that. And kind
it's good you could recognize that, though.
The pop that you get from you being back there is different from maybe not knowing the recipes and, you know, people getting subpar products. Yeah. And also everyone else having to clean up after your ass, exactly. 'Cause you're the boss.
I know
that one.
Well, you and I work in you and I bartend in the hotel world, which is a little bit different because you have people who are like pushing like 60 and like 62. My head bartender where I work, John, he's 52 and he just had his third knee surgery just because some of the movements that you make when you're bartending, when you're in the shit, you're like stretching across your body and like tweaking in one way and grabbing heavy jars with one hand and like kicking the door closed with your back foot. Like that's not like a good exercise practice.
Ron, do you notice any differences in your 40s now with your body?
It's breaking down. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty well documented with the internet and stuff, but after my broken leg in February, I was like, what the fuck, body? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Pull yourself together. Like, it wasn't like I was a super unfit guy, but yeah, something like that. It just takes a long time to come back from it.
Yeah.
While we're talking about being bartenders, I talk about the physical limitations and how hard it can be. This particular story comes to mind was when Josh and I both were still working all the time at the Diamond. Charlie, I think, had been gone and Jeff was gone. And it was like one of the very first times that we sold 10 grand at the Diamond. It was like very busy. And at that time, we were still trying to figure out how to organize it in the right way to get.
And that's like 10 grand worth of like
cocktail.
$12 cocktail.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
Yeah. A lot. Yeah. And
is food a big thing? Ever been a big thing there?
No. No. We put a lot of energy into it in bursts. You know, we'll do a menu change trying to people's interests again. But it's never been a big part of it. And once people think of it as a cocktail bar, they don't think of it for food. And the food right now is amazing, but we still don't really sell a lot. We do some.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Fine. Every cocktail bar struggles with that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like,
at Mammy's too.
It's like, no, I'm just saying that the fact that you guys did $10,000 worth of mostly cocktails, that's amazing.
Yeah, that would have been maybe $1,000.
It's like 9,000.
So away we're going making cocktails, and all of us back then we still had all the glass shakers, and I'm not 100% sure how it all started, but I either knock over or hit the top of a tin, and the Boston shattered, and my well is just now fucked. And so I'm like, Josh, both of us have chits all over the place. Place is packed. It's like going. I'm like, I'm really fucking sorry. I gotta. And so go burn the well, get more glasses. Finally, I'm looking over and he's just being pape. He's very Zen master. And immediately pick up the thing, set it on the bar, and the fucking Boston explodes again.
Are you kidding?
And Josh just looks over at me. He goes, one of these.
What the fuck?
And just takes all the chits back and starts going again.
Do you remember?
Ish. I mean, it wasn't the only time, but no, that was the two banger was. That was pretty special.
So demoralizing.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think we've all experienced that, and that's like why you go to most cocktail bars now, where like the glass is just like not existent anymore. It's all the tin.
Oh, we don't. Yeah, we used tin.
Well, yeah,
I've shattered so many of those
at the Fairmont. Things. The same thing would happen all the time in our well. And we have a couple guys who are very aggressive bartenders. And sometimes when, like you said, you got 10 shits up and you got all these drinks.
You get sped up easy.
And they would just shatter. And I remember one time it was like, I can't remember who it was, but they must have broke like 3 Boston Shakers that night in the well. And I was just like, okay, we got to make a change here because it's clearly like an issue. But especially when you're like under that kind of stress and like you're $9,000 worth of cocktails,
Yeah, I'm one of the old, like I'm still in the minority. I prefer the glass. Even despite that, like
it looks better.
Well, I don't know. I mean, to me it does, but I like the few benefits. I like that you can still see what you've got going on. And
free pouring, you know where you're at.
Yeah. And you know, what stage you're at and all the different cocktails. Again, if you're making one or two drinks, metal on metal, no problem. Go for it. But if you are lining up like that and I'm carrying Ron on my back for most of a night, you know, a whole bar's worth of drinks, then you need to have, you know, if you've got seven or eight bosses going, it's nice to know exactly what you've got going. So I like that.
Yeah.
And then I also, metal on metal, doesn't matter which ones you get, they always still end up getting stuck together. Even the nice Japanese ones or whatever, you know, and not every time, and you can be good at it and you know exactly the angles you want to do, but you'll still see, you know, well, washed up bartenders, people like Sean and, you know, and still trying to, you know, get it apart. And it doesn't matter who you are. You can't look cool doing that.
That's true.
Yeah.
But as a physicality
part of it, it's like the ones are lighter and you can shake more drinks. It's like, as you get more decrepit, as I noticed, it's like, because when they brought in the metal ones, I was like, no fucking way. Like, this is ridiculous. And then I started shaking with them. I was like, wait a second. This is way easier. Probably actually why I ended up breaking my leg, because I was so weak from not shaking glass shaking.
It's true though, actually, that is probably, you know, a couple ounces weight per shake, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that does that out.
I know a bartender friend of mine who slowly started gaining weight, and he would shake, and he used to always shake really high above his head. But then as he was gaining weight, he's like, I had to stop doing that. I'm like, why? He's like, because I started noticing a lot of jiggling. And there's jiggling in areas that I just wasn't very happy with. So he just shakes really close to his body now, and he's just like, and I was like, you didn't just think about losing the weight? He's like, oh, no, that wasn't going to happen. I'm old.
But now he's also probably burning less calories, so it's just going to get exponentially worse.
Yeah.
I thought about it, and I was like, oh, my God. So it's such an interesting thing. But how did did you guys know each other quite well before you started working at Diamond?
I wouldn't say we knew each other well.
Yeah. I mean, we were around each other for a long time. Because back then, I guess, it was Blue Water. I worked with Sophie. Lucy May Browns, everybody came there when you started at Shambar. Yeah.
Where were you right before Diamond?
I worked for Maker's Mark.
Maker's Mark, yeah. So you were at Maker's Mark for those 2 years there?
Yeah.
Okay. So was it an approach, or did you find him, or did you?
No, when I got shit canned, I came to these guys and was like, hey, I need some help. Like, and it was coinciding with Jeff and Charlie were starting to phase themselves
out. This is Charlie Ainsbury, anybody out there?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, his time here was up and had to move home. And
he went back straight to Australia, right? He didn't stay anywhere else. Yeah. Okay.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. He went right back and then became the huge star that everybody knows as Charlie Ainsbury now.
Yeah. I didn't know much about him beforehand, but then when I ran into him this week, there was a lot of cool stuff that he was talking about. So doing all this great consulting stuff back home in Australia. So
yeah,
he's
the best.
Yeah. No, he's super friendly and really nice, but just hearing, I've heard so much of him in the city.
Yeah,
so it was kind of cool.
That's always preceded him. Like, everywhere he goes, people know of him before he gets there, and they're always like, "Oh, this is it?" You know. Yeah. I mean, but that's okay though. You know.
But also, they're like, "God damn it, he's really nice."
Yeah, and he is probably the best hugger as well. Which I don't know if he took advantage of that, but
I don't like.
Okay. It's a good skill.
Yeah,
big there.
Zach's a good hugger. If you're listening, Zach.
My Zach.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Really.
Well, maybe it's just me and his bodies hug well together. I've
always found him quite impersonal.
Kind of an asshole.
Yeah, but who likes hugging anyways?
Well, you're insecure with your sexuality, I suppose. I don't know.
Not at all.
Doesn't like hugs.
No, not at all. yeah, so you came on and you were there for what, 2 years?
I think three and change. Yeah.
Three and change?
So 10 till 13 when Mammy's open.
10 to 13.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it was a good run. But then, I mean, you think about now, you know, we have the 10-year and Leticia is still at the helm. And I mean, if there's the nuts and bolts of what the Diamond is, I think probably is Miss Leticia Castro.
How long has she been there now?
7 years.
7 years?
Yeah, it's amazing. Wow. I can't even, yeah, she is definitely the heartbeat of that place now. And I don't think anybody would argue that or anything. It's amazing. Every time she texts me and is like, hey, do you want to get a coffee? I'm like, oh, fuck, she's going to quit. Oh, no, it's going to happen. And then she's like, oh, I just wanted to make sure, you know, you're happy, everything's good. I'm like, are you serious? Like, of course, you know. And
what's that like now that you guys have, like, both run your own businesses, when you find that one employee who's like, not only do you love having them, but also like, please don't ever leave, like, loyal. Like, but also it's like that one thing, like, you don't have to worry about it anymore. It's like, Ron, you got that kind of with Scotty. You know,
yeah.
Scotty's like that loyal, great, awesome bartender, right-hand man that you've had and you can just like lean on them and build.
Yeah, I think the important thing is to let them know that you care and that what they do is super important. like, you know, I definitely couldn't do what Mammy's without Scotty.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, he's like been a rock for me since he's come on. So yeah, it's, but you know, it's hard. How do you tell that to people without seeming contrived or, you know,
or just like, tell him, Ron, just tell
him.
Yeah,
exactly.
Give him a hug, grab his bum.
It's hard. He's a big dude. Just get all the way around there.
Yeah, you want more money?
Yeah.
You're not going nowhere. But I mean, like, that's because you now have, well, you're about to open up your, what is it, fifth business?
This will be sixth.
Oh, sixth. Yeah. Like, do you, when you find people like that, do you try to move them around or do you try to keep them?
Well, I think, I mean, the way we look at it, I just try to keep people happy. And I think that for all of us, that comes in many different ways. And so, you know, we try to have really open communication with everybody, you know, and talking about when they feel like they need a change, you know, to always please come and don't be shy about asking if they're just thinking about it. You know, I mean, we very rarely, I do take a lot of pride in that. It's very rare that people leave any of our businesses to go to other restaurants. You know, at least we try really hard, and especially with the front of house team, I work a little bit closer with than the back of house. But you know, it's rare that somebody would just do a lateral move to just a different restaurant, you know? And so we do try to have, just new challenges for people when the time comes and they want to grow and develop and do new things, because we all need and want that. And so to just assume that they have to stay in the one position because that's where it's convenient for you, like that's not really fair to them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, I mean, we do talk, Letty and I, about her future long term and what will happen after this for her. But she still manages to just do that place and it doesn't burn her out. Like, I don't know how. It's such a pressure cooker, you know? But she just loves it, you know? She likes hosting that party every night.
How has it evolved? Like, how has Diamond evolved over the last 10 years? What would you say is the biggest thing that's kind of changed since you guys, like, or perception-wise for yourself? Like, even the way
you see it? I mean, well, it was certainly a little bit more cowboy before. And I think that, you know, we used to just kind of show up and I don't know, like grinding it out. Like, the long days and nights while being there, how little we planned and really knew what was going on compared to now. I think there's a level of organization and they do inventory there now and stuff like that. So some things have changed, I guess.
You guys didn't do that in the beginning?
No. Because we were there. I was there every day.
Yeah, you know? So you didn't need to.
And so it was like, it was my booze and we weren't, I mean, we were certainly drinking our fair share of it. So it wasn't really like I had to worry, but we just knew. I knew what was there and, you know, there weren't issues or anything and there never really have been that I'm aware of. But
do you find that's changing? Because I find that's changing the concept of like a lot of people like drinking a lot when they bartend. Because I find a lot of drier bars are happening.
I think that's definitely happening. I think that's one of the best changes that's coming, you know. And it's pretty amazing. I think the again, still slow, but, you know, people's awareness around mental health and, well, just health in general and trying to do this. And it's not about that style of just being the drunkest guy in the room isn't really the best kind of bartender. Maybe that's also why I don't bartend as much anymore.
But. Yeah. Well, I used to work for a global group for not very long, only a couple of years. And one thing you said is really interesting to me is having the option for staff or your, like, you know, your A staff to be able to move laterally in the company. You know, say what you want about EMAD. He's a fucking asshole. But that was one thing that he was, I think, because, you know, Global Grill and Satay Bar was in 2002 in Yaletown. And that was something that he was really conscious of, is if one of your managers or someone on your team wasn't working in one certain concept, he'd be like, hey, let's try them out at Santa Fe or let's try them out at Coast or whatever. So I always really respected that aspect of that company. But then also, getting drunk on shit. Like, that's how that entire company was made. I remember there was one that's so hilarious. We were expected to do shots with our regulars, like our VIPs. It was expected of us. Like, if there was a stagette, we would have to go do a shot with the stag. And if we weren't, like, be like, what are you doing? Like, go have a shot with them. So it'd be to the point where, like, they're called shitties, right? And, you know, me and Tristan have talked about this before, and it's just shitty vodka. So it'd get to the point where you'd have to just, like, have water. Like, yours would be water. Because, like, I can't do 10 shots at work and still be functioning properly.
You can do it. I've done it. I think we've all done it at least once or twice.
Yeah, but, like, it's not... It can't last. Like, you know, I mean, like, that it's a young man's game, right? Like, we're all talking about that. Okay, I just turned 40 this year, so but I always respected him for that, like, giving the people the freedom to stay in the company and move to a different scenario for them to make them happy, because you want to keep your best people, right?
Obviously. But do you think about, like, I've thought about this when I've read about a lot of bartenders nowadays moving, like, you hear about bartenders saying, like, I don't drink, I'm still gonna bartend. Do you think that's kind of a catch 22 in some way? Like, do you think someone can still bartend without drinking? I don't know. Like, do you think that's, like, do you think, because it's, kind of like, it's kind of like a chef not tasting their own food in some ways. Like, do you think that's something that they should?
There's tons of chefs that have allergies to food. There's tons of chefs that have dietary restrictions that they follow.
Yeah.
I don't think it's any different, really. I mean, you know, you think back to, you know, everybody's favorite bar, Cheers. Ted Danson, Sam Malone didn't drink, right? And he owned a bar. That's just, it's, you know, he's like a now trailblazer, not just because Ted Danson, but.
You know, Cheers, there's a lot of millennials out there. I bet you don't even know what Cheers is.
Don't even know what Cheers is, yeah. I don't even know what the millennial version of that would be. The Hills, maybe.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia, probably.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, those guys definitely don't not drink.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think it's easier if you were to, I mean, the difference would be with cocktailing and not tasting. It would be challenging, I think. And I think that if you never drank, it would be hard to be successful in that. But if you...
Well, you wouldn't know your, exactly, spirit knowledge would insanely drop if you're not up to date on what's going on.
It very well could, yeah. It would be very challenging, but there are people out there that do it, and
yeah, I'm not condemning them, by the way. No, I'm not saying that you can't do it.
It would be challenging, though. And I think that the reality is you are compromising your overall product. There's no way that you can actually... You can't possibly be as good as... You know, again, even though it's those subtle adjustments, what they went after a straw taste. And again, maybe those people do straw taste still and then maybe spit. I don't know. That would just get gross.
Yeah, by the way, think about that industry right there. Just the whole idea of the straw tasting. Just because like the whole straw kind of world is basically just disappearing because of stuff like this. And obviously, there's just probably going to be just new advancements in biodegradable.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you guys saw this too. Like in the old days of the Diamond, like thousands of straws. Yeah. You know, like you would sell 1,000 cocktails. That's 1,000 straws, yeah, or more, because everyone needs to taste this drink because it's really good.
Yeah.
And
how many times have we all done that?
Yeah. But then, you know, you think like, I don't know, I was long gone by the time it was faux pas to have straws, but at Mammy's, like it was like, literally I've had the same box of straws that since we said no more straws, it's been there. No one uses them anymore. And it was like such a simple thing.
Yeah.
You know? I noticed at Fairmont, the minute we stopped straws, I thought it was going to be a big backlash. I thought it was going to be like, I thought people were going to be like losing their shit, going crazy.
There are some people, but it's super minimum, like way less than I thought.
No,
too.
But it was like, everyone was like, cool. But like we offer biodegradable straws now. I think they're made out of paper. Yeah, no, yeah. They're made out of like some sort of like cornstarch or something.
Yeah.
But like we corn offer starch. Those if people, they're made out of, I'm getting that wrong, by the way. But they're made out of something biodegradable. But even then, like I'll put them out, no one. Like I'll get like the odd girl who wants one, but that's very rare. But I thought it was going
to
be.
People were still going to want them too. I thought it would be way more common for people to ask. But yeah. Everybody saw this one photo of one turtle, and suddenly it's like, oh my god, we can't. You got to think of the turtle.
Facebook works.
Yeah, and now it's like nobody wants straws, and it's like you didn't really ever need a straw, but you felt like you needed one before, and now you don't. Now you're just totally whatever it was. You're okay with that. I don't know. It's weird how people can just get on the bandwagon.
So yeah, it's like just straws. Like, what about plastic bags? Well, what about all the other fucking disposable plastics that our society uses?
What about Lululemon? What about North Face, right? Like, nobody's going to fucking quit buying that.
Yeah.
But it's okay. As long as they don't have straws, it's right. Going to save the world.
It's all because of one photo of a turtle? What was the photo?
Turtle with it had a straw sticking out of its nose.
And they pull it out and the turtle goes, like, makes this like crazy yelp scream. It's really sad.
Oh, serious? Oh, I never saw that.
Think he would have been stoked.
Get on Facebook more.
Get that out of there.
It hurt, but he was, I'm sure, healed.
Well, I just
what happened to that turtle, anyways. Does anybody know?
Just lived happy ever after, of course.
Had turtle
babies. Went back to the ocean where it's filled with plastic.
I was just reading like the news this morning. They were showing this on CBC. They're how like certain islands down in the Caribbean, like literally when people are in their boats, walls of like layers of plastics just floating on the water. And like this one girl comments on this thing and she was saying, like, when I worked down there for 2 years, we didn't recycle anything. We threw out everything. And she's like, we were a small Caribbean island. We just, like, threw out everything. She's like, I'm pretty confident they weren't throwing it out, like you know.
I just found out, like, a couple weeks ago, there's actually states in the U.S. that don't have recycling programs. Atlanta doesn't have a recycling program.
Right.
There's no receptacles to recycle anything.
Yeah. 2019.
Yeah. Craziness. Have you guys seen those? So these are the metal straws. Like personal metal straws that you carry around. So you just have that attached to your wine crank. Anytime you taste, pull it out. Bam.
Wow. There you go. I don't know if that's food safe.
I don't know if that's food safe at all.
Yeah. We tried to do metal straws.
Every time people, you just boil it off.
If people wanted them. And everybody fucking stole them. We had none left. We had to get them. Now we just use them for tasting behind the bar. But
are you saying people are thieves?
No, I'm just saying people like metal straws.
Okay. Okay, so now that you've done 10 years, you got any big plans for Diamond moving forward? Anything you guys are looking to do? No, nothing.
Not really. No. I mean, you know, I'm so happy with it. Like, you know, again, it to me right now, I just wouldn't change it anymore. We did do a bunch of upgrades. Mark kind of spearheaded some renovations. I don't, you notice the big mural up at the front and in the bathrooms and stuff. Pretty bright, pretty noticeable stuff, but cool. Like, it's fun to have a new kind of wave of that place. So I think we kind of invested in all of that and the new entranceway and a few odds and ends. There we've got some new stools coming actually around the bar.
Nice.
Nice just for the eight around the front bar there. But other than that, honestly, not a whole lot. You know, Jay and Leticia, they're running a great bar and keep Chris in the kitchen as long as I can, and with Betty doing it, and they're doing an amazing job. And so I like it there. I mean, I think it's just, you know, it's a very consistent business now, and that's kind of what you aim for. And
so talk about that idea of like, of this city specifically, because I think we all know the issues of licensing and stuff like that. Do you think it's, because there's really only like a handful of straight cocktail bars in the city, like just like ones like yourselves where it's like more dominated by the beverage program.
Right.
Four?
Well, what is it? There's what? You guys, Kiefer.
Uva, maybe.
Uva.
Is Juniper considered a straight cocktail bar?
No, that's a restaurant.
They do brunch and stuff.
That's a restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think
Cascade doesn't really anymore.
You would think Poorhouse, but they do. It's mostly a lot of food there.
Well, I don't know, actually. I think they do
a good amount.
Disproportionate amount of cocktails there now, actually.
It seems like they're kind of, I mean, now Alessandro's there and they're really trying to push the food again.
He said they've tripled the food sales since he started, which is pretty amazing. So maybe it's back to evening out, but they're a pretty cocktail forward place, but it isn't, you know,
Not like you guys.
Full kitchen and everything.
Yeah.
And they do pretty amazing food.
But do you think there's going to be a moment where we're going to have more of those? Cause I think we need them.
I hope so.
Would you ever do another Diamond ish thing?
Yes, I think so.
Have you guys ever looked into that?
I think so. Sure. Always. But it's tricky. I mean, you need the right people, you know? I mean, that place is special because of the people. And because we, you know, it was all I cared about was making cocktails for years of my life. And it took, you know, I put everything I had into it. And I had, you know, great people next to me who had the same passion, same enthusiasm. And that's what we were really focused on. And you need to have that kind of commitment. And we were, you know, we were very good at what we were doing. So if you don't have that much commitment, you can't really have somebody who's like, oh yeah, well, I'm in school and yeah, I can pick up a couple nights a week. Like, this is what we were doing with our lives.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you need that kind of serious commitment and also a great deal of luck. I mean, that place, it's not like, you know, I mean, what we did was very good, but that's a very special room, you know, like that place it's felt that good since the first time we walked in there when it was a construction site, and it always just feels good in there. And that, you can't undervalue that. You know, you can't just, if you were to pick that up and those people and drop it somewhere else, you know, over in Kits or something, there's nothing to say it would succeed there, you know? And so magic, sometimes you get lucky, and I don't know, you know, I wouldn't just assume that because we opened another cocktail bar, it would do as well as that one.
Yeah, that's very true. That's actually a good way to look at it.
And timing and place, you know, like.
Would you ever do a cocktail bar?
Well, I mean, I tried.
No, I'm not.
I had to put a kitchen into it.
They forced you, right? Did they force you?
No, I mean, that was part of the deal.
But I mean, would you ever just do straight one?
Like, I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't know in Vancouver, but I think in some of the neighborhoods, you know, like look at what are they doing? The Dark Manor and Tiki.
Oh, Shameful Tiki. You got to put that on the list.
There we go. That's one I'm forgetting.
Yeah. But it's like they're trying to do that in neighborhoods, you know, with where the Tiki Lounge
smashes. Have you guys been to Dark Manor?
Yeah.
Is it good?
I think that they're struggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's such
a niche concept.
Yeah. And that neighborhood doesn't have enough people that, you know, everyone's up there's got kids and stuff. They want something, you know, if it was breakfast cocktails, maybe that would be a huge
what is
hit.
It? What is it? Fraser?
And 27th or 8th.
Fraser.
Oh, so that's way past you guys.
Yeah. It's a ways up. I mean, it's a block up from Ubuntu.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of.
Not far from where Escobar was and whatever. I forget the new breakfast spot going in. I forget what it's called.
Escobar was. That was quick.
But I mean, they were there for years before whatever the other thing was, the East Van or whatever it was called.
They've already got something going in there now, I think, now too.
And there's nothing up on like Hastings Sunrise. Like, I don't know if that does Dachi do cocktails or.
Yeah, they do. They have actually a really good cocktail program.
They have a great beverage program altogether.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Mickey and Steven are doing some really cool shit up there.
I live right there.
There's nothing on Commercial Drive.
Yeah, that's right by your area.
I live right there, and it's there are no cocktail bars up there.
No,
but when we talk about it, I mean, obviously, I live right there. I walk, you know, for food a couple nights a week and wander around, and it's still quite barren up that way. But it's also not that busy all over. You know, I mean,
you got them Taco Fino and the Brighton. Is that what it's called?
Brighton? Yeah. Yeah. And then Slow Can a little bit
Brighton
further.
Brighton Pub is like the Yard and the Fringe Cafe. It's not like, it's like a total dive bar.
And then Red Wagon is it close
in a good way.
Most nights,
yeah.
They do
Friday, Saturday, I think they're only open.
Yeah.
No, just Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They're more like a brunch breakfast place. Yeah.
More daytime for sure.
I don't know. There's less.
But I don't know. Maybe a cocktail bar up that way. But again, I don't know.
Yeah, and Commercial Drive, I guess, is it Mezcaleria? But they're like a tequila bar, right?
Yeah.
But they make cocktails.
Mezcal bar.
Right, but isn't strange like you're trying to wrap your brain like the different boroughs and like struggling to find handful of
the reality is that the drinking culture isn't the same in Vancouver as a lot of other cities, you know? So we don't have enough population and enough density to really support a lot of them. I mean, when Ron said like maybe not here, it's like, well, everybody that we know that's opened something in Toronto in the last 5-8 years, like,
is killing.
You know, they're killing it. And they all come back, you know, dressed a little nicer and a lot more relaxed. And you're like, oh, you got to come. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean,
pockets are more full.
Yeah.
They're doing good out there.
But, you know, but there's a drinking culture there too that we still don't really have here. So here it's like, everybody's like, oh no, I like to go out on Friday and Saturday night at 7 p.m. You're like, well, fuck, so does everybody else. And so, you know, it's tough to support a business on two nights a week. And
yeah,
so,
totally.
You know, a cocktail bar, it's tricky. I would think you'd probably have to keep it in the downtown core and be reasonably close. I mean, we've always said too, like, if it was something close to the Diamond, that only helps all of us, right? Just getting more of that scene. Or if another one opened on the same block as Mammy's, it'd be great for both of them, right? You don't need to try and take over another neighborhood where there isn't a bar. It's always helpful to be near somebody else.
That's the McDonald's. That's the Burger King model. Whenever Burger King opens up a new location, they always try to do it as close to McDonald's as possible.
Less market research.
Well, no, so they just immediately take some of their share and then they build off each other.
Right.
So it's like you said, it's like if something was to have been built right next to Mammy's and it was another great something, it probably would help you.
Yeah. I mean, there's this Cambodian restaurant that people seem to really like.
Because they drink there a lot. Bit. Do you ever just look over there and you see the lineup and you're like, what the fuck?
Well, yes and no. I mean, because the lineup is what it is. I mean, and I'm old enough to remember a time when it wasn't like that. You know, they've had to build their own business and they've worked really hard to get to the success that they've had.
Here's the thing. It's good. I think it's good. But it's like the way people line up, I'm like, okay, it's not like.
Well, I think it's great. I think it's a pretty special place. I agree. I don't think anything's worth lining up like that.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like when I see that, I'm like, okay, I'm not waiting an hour to get into this damn place. Like, it's good food. Don't get me wrong. I like the atmosphere there. But I'm like, no, like I would just be like, no, okay, I'm just going to MMTO's. Like, I'll just go to, like.
Yeah.
Well, I get like 5% of the lineup that comes to Mammy Taylor's.
Yeah, but you also got screwed because of the fucking construction that was happening next door to you for fucking 5
years. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, construction's gone now. It's like, I don't know if we're busier or not. I think it's probably the same.
Yeah, it is. But I think you're hitting on something very correct about this city. Is it just like, why is that? Like, why is Vancouver not have a dining culture? You think it's just population? Or like a drinking culture, or
I don't know exact numbers. Yeah, exact.
Well, I mean,
numbers,
that, obviously, population's a big one. I get that, but I mean,
we also there's 3,000 restaurants in Vancouver. 3,000, more than 3,000.
That's
how many's in Toronto, and they have 10 million people.
Yeah, but it's also I was just in the Arbor getting some food to go, talking to my friend Paul who runs the place, and I think he's a part owner, but it's separate than Acorn. Which I didn't know until I was talking to him, but he's an old house DJ, and it's the same thing in the music scene in Vancouver. When I've been DJing since, like, you know, 1997, and we always talk about like the glory days of house music, and like, where can you go at this moment in time? Name me one place where you can go and listen to like a good deep house set, or like listen to good tech house, otherwise than going to open studios or going to sometimes a boxcar they have house nights. So it's this whole transition music wise. Like, we've always thought that nobody. Club owners, promoters, all that kind of stuff. No one wants to take a chance in Vancouver. Nobody wants to do something unique. And if something doesn't succeed within 6 months, it's gone. Done. So I think there's a lot of similarities in music culture and, like, you know, how many great bands can you name from Vancouver? How many great bands can you name from Montreal and Toronto? Like, it's night and day.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's some similarities between the culture.
But I think a lot of it also comes down to, at the end of the day, and I think, Ron, you and I have talked about this before, and I don't know if you guys notice it at all in your businesses, but like, the end of the month, it slows down real quick because everyone's got to pay rent. And I think the biggest thing that really kind of impedes the city is it's just so fucking expensive.
Well, it's certainly not, it's not helpful. You know, it's a tough city.
Do you guys ever notice it? Stuff like that? Like, just like your like little moments, you're like, oh, the 30th of every month, our sales drop.
There's always, I mean, you know when it's the end of the month for sure. And the start, like all around that is definitely a little dip everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's not going to get better anytime soon, you know? I mean, I guess it's starting to get a little bit better. Raising minimum wage by a couple of bucks helps. And then everybody kind of ticks their way up. And I guess people might have more disposable income, theoretically. But the city's expensive. You know, that is certainly part of it. And I don't know. I guess it is different, though. There's much more. With 9-to-5 culture here, it seems that a lot of people really feel like at the end of that, they want to then get home, shower, change before going out for dinner. So we don't have as much of like even that 5 p.m. push, which you see. You know, that's what a lot of people talk about in Toronto as well, is like the suits and everybody downtown. It's like right after work, you go and you hit happy hour. And I know that's a big part of, you know, in London and stuff, where commute can be really intense and really, you know, with such high traffic, you want to kind of wait that out just a touch and even just have a drink with your work colleagues and stuff. You know, maybe they see that culture start to build, though. And that's what we don't really seem to have. Like, you know, there aren't a lot of restaurants that right at 5 o'clock, you know, few, obviously, that do well, but it doesn't just happen here where people naturally go out drinking the same way.
But that probably also stems with the idea we don't have a lot of like, business corporate culture here too.
Right,
like downtown.
That's true.
You know, like if you had like, because like when you're talking about like the suits and stuff, is I'm probably my where I work is probably the only place in the city that gets that.
That's right.
Like the Pac Rim at 4 o'clock every day, it's just suits and it just gets rammed, and it's all the players, all the people who run the CEOs and the guys running all the big business with all the money,
right?
Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, they just walk in and yeah, you hang out, and I'm sure like
there's not trickle down from that.
There's not trickle down. Well, because there's probably just not enough of them.
Right.
And I think
I'm not saying like I want any of that either. You can have that.
So, no, they're good.
Yeah.
So anytime someone wants to spend $26 for a martini, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take that business. So, but I'm lucky at the Fairmont. I mean, the Fairmont does a really good job and we have a great room and it's good. But like you said, there's probably a few things that this city, but I mean, it's getting better though. Vancouver's grown. It's even in the 10 years that I've been here, it's emerged and developed, and I think it's going to keep going that way. But yeah, it's interesting. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I think 10 years.
I've been here 10 years.
Oh wow.
I think that, you know, also what you were kind of touching on before as well is that other change is that cocktail culture is spreading further as well, and people are ordering them at hotel bars, at pubs. Like, you can get cocktails all over now, and that is pretty fun. I think that's kind of a nice change, and maybe that will continue to help push that little bit of like drinking culture. I think cocktail hour is nice at 5 o'clock, you know, 5-6 o'clock.
I mean, happy hour is a great concept. It's just Vancouver doesn't use it properly. And that's, it seems to be like in other cities, it's like you go out and you can have happy hour as well as other things. But here it's like, you have the people that are happy hour people that are only happy hour people. They come for the, you know, whatever the deal of the day is, and then they're gone. Thanks for your $9, but that doesn't keep us in business.
But do you like having happy hour then?
I love it, but again, because we didn't have it for so long, we're in the midst of building culture around it. So, you know, getting people to go directly from work to have a drink before they go home. It's like, it just takes time.
You know what's weird is I never think about happy hour. When I go to a place, like I was at the Poorhouse the other day, I was meeting with Mickey, and we showed up and they're like, oh yeah, it's happy hour. And I was like, oh, like it's always for me, it's like a nice little surprise, but I never like factor in, like, I need to go here for happy hour.
Well, you're very wealthy.
Yeah.
That must be nice.
Expensive tastes.
No, I mean, I know what you're saying, but I think that, well, for a lot of people, I mean, getting a deal is always nice, you know? And I think that always feels good for people. I like it as a vehicle, yeah, to help get people in and try something out. And also, you know, at the end of it, when you get your bill, if you have a bunch of happy hour stuff on there as well as regular price stuff, you might leave there feeling like, oh, that wasn't so bad, you know, like that felt good and, you know, felt like I got good value. And then maybe it's more likely those people come back, you know. So I think it's great and, you know, for an opportunity to try and drive business into otherwise very quiet times is
But when you guys, okay, think about this. Take your heads out of your own businesses and stuff like this. When you guys go out for drinks and stuff like this, do you factor in those decisions? Or are you like, I just want to go here because I like the place? Because I'm always driven by, I want to go somewhere because I like going there. I'm not thinking I need to go there because of the happy hour. I know some people do. Like you said, when obviously money is a factor for someone. Ron and I think I've talked about this before. Like some people are like, I've only got $20 to spend, and I'm gonna find a way to do that.
Right.
And I'll find the cheapest place to do that, and right. I'll do that. But
no, I think you're right, though. I think for sure, I certainly always pick where I want to hang out.
Want to go? Yeah, exactly.
And part of it is, you know, because we're old industry, and you feel an obligation to support your industry, and that I think that's also something that is dying a little bit in Vancouver, where you know there's the Diamond was great. It was a great example. People flew from all over the world to do that. In 10 more years, is it, you know, like, is it going to be the same? You know, like, you don't know. It's very interesting seeing how always industry has supported restaurant industry. And that was, you know, that's what kept you open on Sundays and Mondays and Tuesdays. Now everybody's closed on Sundays and Mondays because industry's not going out and supporting.
Mm, interesting. I was at the Kiefer on Friday night, and man, I tell you, at like 11:37, that place like filled up. Or sorry, 1:37.
Oh yeah,
just before it closed, like filled up, like it was like bursting at the seams with just like everyone from the area. So interesting. All industry just there to get a quick drink before they have to go.
I don't know. I blame all the breweries. Okay. Fuck them. They took all the customers.
I mean, certainly there are some big box places that have opened recently that, you know, that take up a lot of people on given night, you know. And I mean, beer culture is something that if you're going for cocktail culture, it is a serious threat, I guess. If you were to have any, it would be that, you know, people can go out and you can have a bunch of beers and they're $6 or $7 each, like you were saying, you know, and happy hour they're $4. Well, cocktails can't compete with that for sure.
That would
be the other tough one. You're right about you know, something that would be challenging for cocktail.
Well, think about Vancouver. Like, okay, so back when you opened the Diamond in 2009, cocktail culture was really starting to take off, and for the next 4 years, I think it was the driver. I think for most people, it's like, I'm going out, I'm getting a cocktail time. I'm going to go to Lavatoire, I'm going to go to Diamond, I'm going to the Kiefer Bar, I'm going to the Poorhouse, I'm going to go with cocktail. And then right around 2013 is when 33 Acres opened, and then Strange Fellows, and then Brass Neck, and then all these small breweries, and then it was just an explosion of breweries in Vancouver. And right. I think over the last five or six years, it's really like, now it's like beer culture. And eventually everything's cyclical, but we'll go through things. I would like to see actually a lot of satellite wineries from the Okanagan moving into the city. I think that'd be really cool to see. You know, I'd love it where I could go to somewhere right next. I'd love to go to a little satellite, you know, Blue Mountain or Bella right next to 33 Acres and sit down and have a little tasting room. I think that would be really cool.
Do you know about that project going in at 7th and Ontario?
I don't. So I've heard some stuff, but I don't know what's exactly going there.
That'll be something kind of like that. And the room is stunning. Like, that's going to be really cool.
But, like, I'd like to see stuff like that. But I think you're right. I think the price point where beer, especially the breweries, they can charge $4 and get away with it because they're making the beer right there. So, definitely. But I think
they don't, though, hey? They almost always charge the same pop as we do, even though they pay a lot less for it. But that's...
that's just business. Yeah. That's good business.
They could charge so much less, but they don't.
Would you do a brewery?
For sure. Yeah. But only if we could do it well. You know, I mean, same thing. Like, I can't just assume that, you know, because I've done a good cocktail bar means I can open a good brewery, you know, like it's I think that really discredits like the quality of, you know, everybody else in that industry, you know? And so we'd have to have the right team of people. And I would love to, though. It is something I drink a lot of beer and I like it, but we'd have to do it in a way that it fit what the city needed and what we felt, you know, we could do really well. So I think one day it would be great. We've had some conversations about it. But.
Nice. Yeah. You think about there's only a few real cocktail bars. There's not just a few breweries.
No.
There's many, a lot of many breweries. But there's only a few that are really succeeding.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, there's another 2-3 years, there's going to be a lot of breweries for sale. It's you know, opportunity time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, the optics of it, everybody's like, you see the beer on listed somewhere and you think, oh, those guys are killing it. It's like, well,
yeah,
it's still a very hard business. It's still tight margins, you know, and totally. And even some of the most successful people are, they're up against it, you know, and the cost to get in, you know, to build a brewery is very high.
Right.
It's a long process to get that approved and get licensed and everything. So you don't just turn around and suddenly you're rich, you know?
Yeah, I know. We talked about that with Sam when he was on the podcast here, and Nick Black's brought that up, and so does Patrick. I mean, just even getting listed in the BCL is a pain in the ass sometimes. Patrick dealt with some of those issues. And then, I mean, Sam was saying like their brewery is just small and it's not very big and they don't really have a lot of plans right now to grow it. And they love kind of what they're doing right now. And I love their beer. I love what they're doing. They've fucking some of the best branding out there. I think it's, yeah. I'm very proud to have those guys, him and what they're doing on the podcast. But like, goes to show you, like you said, like it's like, yeah, they're very successful in this market, but like, it's not like they're not like they're Labatt's and Molson where they're blowing it out, making billions of dollars here. They're, you know, it's still, like you said, the cap. I'm always amazed by the people that do breweries because I'm like, the capital, just get them open. Like that's, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's a really cool market and it's interesting to see how it's changed and evolved. But
so there's maybe what you're suggesting is there's a little bit of cocktail fatigue maybe, and then just having all this amazing craft beer coming in the city. So I think I read somewhere that 150 breweries since 2000 in BC, 150, I think. Including all of our ale trail and all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
So I do think what you said rings very true. It's cyclical cultural things that happen. It's like, what's the newest thing? And then once there's so much of those new things, everyone just kind of resets and goes like back to, oh yeah, I really want a fucking Manhattan right now. I don't want an IPA. I want a Manhattan.
Yeah.
You think about like at the beginning of the Diamond, it was like a very clear departure from what the norm was, down to like, we're only going to carry one vodka. Maybe we're not even going to carry vodka because vodka sodas are for guys in the club that want to have their fist in the air. Yeah. That's not what this is. This is for gentlemen. This is for people who want to be sophisticated. Then you fast forward where every pub in the corner has a, well, I mean, what? Donnelly makes great cocktails.
Yeah.
But any pub will be, you can get a Manhattan, get a Negroni, can get an old fashioned, whether they're made well or not, debatable. But then, now, in the last 2 years, we've had this huge shift again with these nudes and neutrals and vodka sodas in a can. And is that where peak cocktail culture is, where this is now the backlash against it? It coupled with the breweries. This is an option for people who don't do breweries because they're gluten-free or whatever it is, sugar-free, whatever. But they can sure chug vodka sodas in a can with artificial flavoring in them.
Do you guys carry those?
No.
We did an experiment. I brought them in.
The nudes?
Nudes, peach nudes. I said, what's the number one selling?
Peach?
I went to the liquor store. I was like, what's the number one selling of these things? And he was like, oh, the kiwi, whatever. And I was like, what's the next biggest selling?
Are they from Vancouver?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, as we're talking about breweries, 150 breweries, before the liquor board, at the beginning of this summer, there were 26 applications to release something similar to a nude or a neutral.
Right.
26 companies that are making these things.
So they saw the success of this.
It's just,
oh,
yeah.
Fuck, I can do this.
And it's Vancouver and everybody's got to be exactly the same.
I don't know if you guys know who the nude guys are. Anybody know?
One of them came into Mammy's not very long ago. Very nice guy. Just,
are they part of the industry? Or are they just like entrepreneurs?
Fucking smart dudes who decided people,
I get them
like,
all mixed up. Yeah, all, nude, all those products and their
owners. Nude, neutral?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Pure
soda or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one, I think one of them
none
is
none of
like,
them are spelled properly though.
Yeah.
You know, they're all,
I remember when Nude came out or whatever it was 2 years ago and I was like, this is the stupidest fucking thing in the world. I was like, this is such a dumb name. Because I actually like the Hail. I thought Hail was the one that kind of really spearheaded everything because it was like, I was like, oh, like boozy.
A beer, isn't it?
No, it's iced tea.
Oh, it's an iced tea.
It's boozy. It's basically spiked vodka iced tea. It's vodka. It's basically essentially vodka iced tea.
Right? Yeah.
And that was kind of, but the branding was really good. And it was really interesting branding. And it was like, but it was a really good name and it was very catchy.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all. Like, it totally made sense. But then when I saw Nude, I was like, this is so stupid. But then I see
it's essentially the same
everyone.
Thing. It's the same thing as a Hey, y'all.
But think about it. You go to the beach, you want to take something, but you want to drink something you can drink a lot of, but you like vodka sodas, don't like beer. But you'd want to bring vodka, and it's easy. Look how easy it is to take a six-pack of that shit.
Yeah, I was at a barbecue last summer, and it was like all industry vets, all of the people that, basically, we used to go on this Ron's same rant about vodka, and like we were those people. And somebody brought them, and I was just like, "Oh my god, it's happening!" And then they were like, "Here, try one," and I was like, "Oh, come on!" And I did it. I fucking drank one, and
was
I loved
good?
It. Well, it was, you know, it was you don't taste anything. It's just a refreshing, just quick like, thing to have. The big thing that I think they do that people might not realize, or like maybe we discount them too much, but they have value if you are, say, you're driving. you know, and you only want to have a certain amount of, like, it's a drink unit now as opposed to
two things.
Like, yeah. And if you're mixing drinks or somebody's like, here, have this cup of, you know, vodka, like, you don't know how much you're drinking. And so for people who are trying to be responsible, I think they kind of have an advantage that way, I guess. They don't taste like anything. I mean, that's the thing. And if anything, the ones that try to add flavor, those are gross. You know, like, but if it's just a vodka soda and like maybe with lime, some of them don't, like, well, it's just refreshing. It's just like drinking a soda water.
But here's the thing. Think about the big brand, like the Absolutes, the Grey Gooses of us. Do you think they're eventually going to get in?
They are doing. Oh, yeah. They're all doing.
Tons. Like, even Mos Clamato.
But eventually, I'm saying, do you think we're going to see it where we go to the liquor store and you're going to see Grey Goose soda?
I think you will, yes.
Yeah. That's it only makes sense.
You're going to see
because they're missing out, right? They're, like, that's who's upset about this. Yeah. They're seeing a drop in sales because people are using, you know, whatever the least expensive vodka they can track down, right? And
sorry, I missed your answer, by the way. Do you guys carry them or no?
We don't know. Don't? Okay. I mean, I feel like that's, like, Ron did it to take the piss was the only reason why he brought them in. There's no reason for, like, a bar or restaurant to actually carry something like that, because that's the, of all the things to make, that a highball is like the easiest thing you could ever make.
I wanted to see if they would sell.
Did they sell?
No, fuck, I haven't sold one.
Oh, you still have them?
Just the staff fucking loves them.
What do you guys think about Negroni Week, by the way? This is going on right now. Do you like it?
I think it's a good way to sell a lot of Negronis.
Yeah,
it raises a lot of money for a bunch of different charities. Did you see the list of who's, like, it's funny seeing who's giving to what charities? I obviously let Zach pick the charity, and it's some fucking, like, wild outdoor spaces.
Totally, yeah.
You have to give a dollar, right?
A dollar. Well, you can give whatever you want. But yeah, it's usually a dollar from each cocktail.
Each cocktail, right?
Yeah. But I mean, it raises money and raises awareness. And, you know, we're talking about cocktail culture and stuff. It's a good way for everybody in the industry to get together over one thing and be able to, you know, talk about Negronis, talk about what you're doing with your Negronis, talk about whatever it is, fancy gin, fancy Amaro, whatever. You know, it's just, it brings a little bit of focus back to the industry. Plus, everybody drinks Negronis all week. They're really easy to make.
No, I'm not shitting on it. I'm just saying, I just find it very fun, fascinating that, like, it hasn't spawned like Old Fashioned Week and Margarita Week or whatever. Like, I just think
every week.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think the idea is, I like the idea. I'm just saying it's kind of interesting that, like, it hasn't spawned other things.
So do you have to
Campari spends a lot of money.
I was going to say, I think it's successful because of how much Campari backs it, right?
Oh, okay.
I think that if you were to do, say, Margarita Week, who's picking up the bill, tab? Right? Yeah. So that would be more challenging. It would just get spread out a little bit, maybe too much. But it's cool. Yeah, I think
Caesar Week, that's initiated by Mott's, right? Same thing as, like,
you would think.
They're just trying to build.
Yeah, you can just stricken that from this record because Caesars are disgusting. So
no, I agree 100%, but that's, they invented a week. It's like, now it's Caesar Week, and I had to make a fucking Caesar cocktail where I work. Like, why? Like, because it's National Caesar Day. Yeah. Well, it's not Caesar Day, not Caesar Week. It's like, why? Like, if there's, I can see why Negroni would be. I know we're in Canada, and fuck, people are going to be like,
if there's one thing I want to, like,
Caesars are our national heritage.
If there's one thing I ever want to rant on in my entire life, I want to know the person who found a way to convince people that Caesars are the thing you drink when you're hungover for breakfast. I don't get it.
Oh yeah, Sunday.
Get it.
It's because people think there's a high amount of B12 in Clamato juice, there is, but there's B12 in everything, and apparently B12 makes you, like, less hungover or something.
I don't get it, because, like, you go for
and
brunch.
And also say, like, salt and those sort of things make sugar. You feel better.
Because you both hot probably sauce. Sell a ton of them at brunch. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get why that Caesar took off for that moment.
Oh, and also we should maybe point out the fact that there's vodka in it. And if your body's craving alcohol, if you put alcohol back into it, it's going to make you feel good.
Yeah, but you could have
anything. Called hair of the
dog. Yeah, but that's it. But I think it's the placebo effect of, like, oh, I feel bad, I should have a Caesar, and then look at this, now I feel better. And they're like, I remember that was the tonic that I had last time that really cured me, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, they're not good, though.
No, they're disgusting.
Glad we're all in agreement.
Do you guys do Negroni Week?
Yeah. I think at all the spots. Nice. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess what I was meaning to ask before we got on that Caesar thing is, do you have to sign up for Negroni Week?
You do.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, I think the minimum is 25. Yeah, $25 or something is the entry, and then you give at the end.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't always. I can't. Like, I seem to recall. My memory is that this never is as busy for us. Like, we don't sell a lot of them. Our donation is not as big as I would like it to be. Like, it's not, doesn't bring in a ton of people for it. But there are some people in the first couple of days that want to check it out and see what you got going on. And
this year, I made mine $10. we're selling lots of Negronis.
Oh, yeah. Good.
What's your Negroni? Deal. What are
Negroni.
The Negroni? But what are the spirits?
Gin, sweet vermouth, and Campari.
What kind of gin?
Bombay Sapphire's in our well.
Okay.
Yeah. Big shout out, Bacardi.
Look at you.
I'm just curious. I just do this podcast. I don't really know anything about cocktail spirits or anything. I am a bartender, but like the amount of knowledge you guys have compared to me, that's why I was.
But you know what's in that fucking Negroni?
Yeah, but like you could use, like you're saying Mars, you could use Montenegro. Oh, you're like fucking and Brockman's, and then something else, and it would be fucking.
Are you guys
super
still,
crazy?
Do you do that
weird.
Negroni slushy?
We do not. The slushy machine went down. We had the Cadillac of slushy machines, but when it comes time to fix Cadillac, shit gets expensive. So we don't have one any longer. And it was fine. It was really cool though. We used to do the watermelon Negroni slushy. That was like a pretty good one.
Do you still have the machine?
No, I had to give it back. If anybody's looking for one, talk to Jacob Sweetapple.
No, when I think of machines like that, I think of. Movie Office Space.
The printer. Oh, no, this thing was, it was crazy. Everybody wanted to smash the shit out of it. But it was like a $6,000 thing, right? Like you can't, and it wasn't ours also, I guess. But it's frustrating, you know, when you're reliant on some machine that just always breaks. And then once it's going downhill, that's sort of the end of it. So
Sounds amazing.
H was here. He told me, and I should have probably known this. He's like, yeah, I rent my ice machine for $40 a week. It's like, and you, when it breaks, do you just call them and they come and fix it? And he's like, yes. Like, why doesn't everybody do this? It's like, we can rent our glass washers and stuff. It's like, it blew my mind. I was like, are you gotta be fucking kidding me? What a great.
Can you do that here?
No. I mean, not to my knowledge.
Because ice machines are like $5,000, $10,000, aren't they?
Yeah.
Fucking expensive.
Yeah.
We have the Hosejaki one or upstairs in Botanist. And then we have the shitty cold draft downstairs, and the shitty cold draft breaks down all the time.
Those Hoshizakis are pretty bulletproof. I just those got my first awesome. One, yeah, and my next one's going to be a Hoshizaki.
I love those ones. Those are...
I might be done with the cold draft game.
Yeah. Who makes, well, which one makes better ice then? I think
it's just depends. Well,
the cold draft is bigger. It's bigger 1.25 by 1.25 versus the 1 inch by 1 inch. So it's slightly bigger.
But also the pressure that's required to make those is what breaks the machine all the time.
Yeah, it's not Japanese. So
love those Japanese. And then, okay, well, one last thing. Camby's closing.
Ah, yes.
You guys have any thoughts? You guys have any thoughts on this? Do you guys care?
I remember when I first came, well, maybe not first came to Vancouver, but when, because Kayla Smith worked at the Camby for a long time. And that was the kind of the time when I would spend any amount of time there. And it was like a disgusting hole then. But it also is part of the, you know, the fabric of what Vancouver is. Is it the whole thing that is surrounding this is you guys probably all remember when the Waldorf was closing.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was a catastrophe because everybody had been to the Waldorf one time and hadn't been in 10 years and they wanted to sign a petition to keep the Waldorf open so they could never go there again.
It was popular there for about 2 years. Right?
Of course. But again, all the people that were complaining about it because they saw it on Facebook. Yeah. They don't support it. They're not going there. And the Camby's the same thing. If it wasn't for like all of the ESL students that are packing in there and the dudes who sell weed outside of the back door, who would be at the Camby?
Are people upset that the Camby's closing?
I think they're
upset because it's Donnelly.
I think there's a bit of both. I think there's a bit of people like kind of be like,
Donnelly's buying it.
Yeah.
Oh,
they bought it.
Oh, yeah, isn't that what's going on?
I don't think so.
Am I breaking news here? Isn't that?
But I thought that they sold the building. And so the building is just going to get torn down and they build towers there, I would assume.
Okay. I might be making all of this up, but what I heard is that Donnelly had acquired the whole thing and was planning to do a boutique hotel on the top, more like a high-end cocktail bar sort of thing in the middle floor and on the ground floor doing more like a beer garden sort of thing. But I don't know where I would have heard that.
That sounds like more plausible.
Yeah, and so the place is shithole.
It's like, a shithole. That's what I was saying.
It's a teardown.
It's like nobody should be upset that place is going, and it's true. Like it's a totally transient clientele they have there, and people don't like it because it's good. It's a cheap place to drink, and
I went there once in my entire life, and the only time I went there, I got dragged there on a Friday night, packed. It was like my first year living here, and as I was there, I saw like three rats running around.
Yeah,
and I was like, "This place is a fucking shithole. Get me the fuck out of here."
Yeah,
well,
and don't get me wrong, I like a good shithole.
Yeah,
you know, like I love the Cobalt as much as the next person. You know, but that place was a fucking shithole.
Yeah. Well, at one point, you could get a pitcher of Fat Tug IPA for $7.25.
Holy shit.
How fucked up is that? Pitcher.
What? What?
Yeah, like they have super cheap pitchers, and holy they have Fats on tap. Jamie, yeah. You would have loved it.
I would have loved that.
You never know, though. It's like how many half pitchers went into that pitcher.
Yeah, that's true.
Can I get one?
Recipe. It's just
can I get one beer, please? Yeah. What are you having? I'll just have a pitcher of Fat Tuck.
That's what the whole place was. That's, to my knowledge, just growing up going there, you'd go there to get fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's super cheap pitchers. And
exactly.
And super not clean tap lines and like just a shithole.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, you need those plays. They're important when you're 19 or 18 or whatever. And like the rugby club, you know, when those were, you know, like you need those kinds of places.
Fringe Cafe on West Broadway.
Big shout out.
The Yard.
Yeah.
And also the Brighton as well.
The Fringe Cafe. The same.
Fringe Cafe is in, it's in West Broadway. Past,
do you guys ever go to the Ivanhoe?
For a long time, they were the number one Jameson's account in Vancouver, the Fringe.
Really?
That's the place where, at the Fringe Cafe, you can get a Boilermaker for, I think it's $10, and you can pick your scotch and pick your beer. And like, it's premium. Like you can have an Oban and, you know, Grand Line Pale Ale for $10. Yeah. It's crazy. They have some ridiculous drink specials.
That's wild.
Anyways, I thought I'd bring that up because I'm like, fuck, when I saw the Canby closing, I was like, good.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's also just like a cool opportunity for it to be something new. And if it is in fact Donnelly, I mean, they've been doing some cool stuff. They're totally, you saw the, like they're completely the Winking Judge, right?
Yeah, they redid
I thought they were just gonna. I thought they were just gonna keep it as the Winking Judge.
No, they changed it. They redid it. They redid the whole thing.
The branding looks amazing, though. Yeah. I was driving by the other day.
I was talking with Cam, and he was kind of explaining because I mean, I remember the Winking Judge, but yeah, they pulled everything out, moved walls, and maybe they didn't move any walls, but so they definitely did a big redesign inside.
But what's interesting, I find about the Donnelly, and I mean, Donnelly's got a lot of. I think it's got a lot of supporters. It's also got a lot of people that kind of despise the company just because they're so massive now.
Do you ever find out if they're Sing Sing or not? Does anybody know that?
They are.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they are Sing Sing. But I don't actually...
I feel so betrayed.
But it's interesting because when you say that, we like Sing Sing. You like going there.
I know. But I'm not going to go there now.
No, what I'm saying is, but you got to think about that. I actually don't have a really big issue with Donnelly. I don't like... I mean, I'm not a big fan of the McDonaldization of what they've done for the... For the pub community, because they've basically forced other pubs to feel like you either have to kind of be like us or
right.
But I think this is it. I think that what they used to do sucked.
But what they do now is really good.
It doesn't suck.
Yeah,
or it doesn't suck as bad. And I think that people are upset because they used to do everything the same, paint it black, run the same fucking program all over the place, and the food has, you know, always been pretty mediocre at best. And so people don't like that. And then, but they get great locations. You know, they make it nice enough and. You know, none of that was original. And so I think people don't like that. And I think that's justifiable. I didn't like that. And that was why I used to have a problem with them as well. Now they have taken that, I would like to think. And now when they steal people's ideas, they do it from more broad, you know, scope of places and they get better designers, I think. And they don't just paint it black. And like Sing Sing's a gorgeous room.
Yeah. Like
and so, you know, when you see that, you're like, well, can't really hate on this for that, you know? And so I think, I don't know, like their past sins were shitty. But now I think that, you know, you kind of have to let that go maybe. And you don't have to let it go.
I guess I don't forgive easily.
Yeah, that's good.
That's me. That's on me though, not Donnelly.
But you think too, you know, everybody that complains about Donnelly for the sake of them being Donnelly, they've had success. Everyone's jealous of success. But it's the same people that'll go to Earl's or Cactus Club or Joey's without any thought. When it's those guys are way bigger contributors to what the problem that everyone says Donnelly is than Donnelly.
It's the exact same thing. They're just doing it in a different market. They're doing the exact same thing. They've just found a way to McDonaldize something because people love the idea of knowing. It's why people love McDonald's when they go to any other country in the world. It's like, I'm nervous. I don't know what to eat in Philippines, but I see McDonald's and I can go there because I know it's going to be the exact same thing that I'm going to get back home.
Right.
And so people love that sometimes. It's like, I can go to the Oxford or I can go to... You know, the Mets, or I can go to...
But what is it at those places that you're after?
Well, I'm not after it, but a lot of people like the idea that I can go into any one of those places and get...
Consistency. Or that knowing factor.
But so people cheap beers and shots.
Drink specials, they're going to have all that, it's going to be loud, they're going to have gaming. A lot of people love that, because you just turn your brain off and then you just go, you don't have to think.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, what I see now and what I think they're trying to do, and they're trying to branch out their brand, and I mean, they're now in Toronto. But they're doing like stuff like Sing Sing. So when we went into Sing Sing, I didn't know it was Donnelly. I went in and I was like, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Small menu, pizzas and pho, which is kind of weird.
I wonder how that feels now, though, right? That idea, like, we're opening this new project. Don't tell anybody that it's us.
You know? No, like, but the thing about that, like, they're not.
They tried hard, I think, to keep it. Yeah. As far as I knew, for the first couple of weeks, nobody knew. I knew. It was like, who opened this place?
But it's this bright room. It's nice. It was really well designed. The beer program was really cool.
Beer program is fantastic.
Yeah. So we were like, so then when I see that, and like you said, I can't really shit on it. I'm like, kind of.
Yeah, but the mentality of you don't want to give money to the fucking. The man.
That's fair too.
You know, you want to like support small local businesses.
That's fair too. But they, I mean, again, I think there are other partners in that one that are, I think, not involved in others. So they are minority partners and you should support those guys.
Totally.
Jeff just subsequently.
And also you want to support the brewer.
At one time they were a small local business. Sure. So it's like, because they've had success, so you can't fault them because people like what they do.
I wrote about this a couple of years ago in a column like that when I had someone tell me that they hated Laboratoire. And I was like, how do you hate Laboratoire? He's like, because they're so pretentious. And I'm like, you're just mad at them because they're good. That's the only reason why you hate them. And it's like that classic line when you find that musical artist that you love and all of a sudden they become popular and you're like, oh, I can't like them anymore. And it's like, no, like you can't get mad at them for being successful. And it's like, yeah, they were a small business and they bloated because people liked what they were offering or people are just dumb.
When we had Nick Black and Patrick.
Well, I brought this up because I was about
told you we were never fucking allowed to bring up Coldplay on our podcast ever again.
I didn't bring it up.
But that's what you were thinking of.
That's what it was. I used to like Coldplay a lot when they first came out. Their first two albums I really liked. And then once they got really, really popular, I was like, oh, I can't like these guys anymore because I was out with my ex-girlfriend at the time and her mom was like really into them. I was like, okay, done, game, set, match. I'm not fucking listening to this band anymore.
Ah, humans. We're so mentally frail.
But it's fucked up. That's how fucked up human beings are. It's like you're given this runway where like we want you to do well, but not too well. And if you do too well, fuck you. We're not going to like you anymore, which is fucked up.
Totally. Anyways, the world we live in.
I think that's a good point for us to end on.
Yes. Coldplay? Fuck.
I love
it.
It's just a mic drop.
Every time. Yeah.
Show for you. With you.
We're going to end on Coldplay. Josh, thank you so much. Ron, you got a big barbecue coming up.
Ribfest, on Monday. I think it's Canada Day.
I guess this will probably come out after this. This won't matter.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks for coming to Ribfest, everybody.
Amazing. Thanks, gentlemen. Always a pleasure. And do check us out, as always, on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Spotify and Luminary. Do check out our new website, midrangevancouver.com. You can find Beats and Repeat, our other podcasts on there, Mickey's Weird Podcast, Flux, and obviously us there.
Flux Session 5 just got dropped, so check that out.
The new website, got a lot of great content on there right now if you want to learn about some films, music, all that stuff up there. And I've got some good stuff coming out on Scout as well. Got a big cocktail column that should be popping pretty soon, so look for that. And thanks, gentlemen. This was a pleasure.
Well, let's just say quick congrats to the boys.
Oh, yeah, by the way, the boys.
The Botanist.
Yes. Boys at Botanist won Bulls Around the World. Congratulations, Grant, Max, and Jeff. And shout outs to Vancouver and those guys right there. So.
And shout outs to Jeff as well for winning. Diageo.
Diageo World Class.
World Class, Canada. Amazing.
Good stuff. Gentlemen, thank you. Have a good day.